Hello, everyone. My name is Jude Ribello. I'm also on the BeachHims board and director of communications, so the little program, the website, as well as the email blast I'm sure you got inundated with. A few announcements before we get started that Bridget wants me to make is with regards to the evaluation forms, then the process. So you don't have to write your name on the evaluation forms. It's still anonymous. But what we will do is most of the board will have a bunch of tickets with us, and when you provide us the evaluation form, we'll give you a raffle ticket, and the other one will go into the bowl that we'll be drawing for the actual door prize. So we'll be doing that at the end of Dr. Samuel's presentation. Oh, yeah, and you have to be in the room. Yeah, that's right. So I'm also the manager of methodology and quality at Leidos Health. And our next speaker is the Executive Director of Regional Care Solutions, IMITS, at PHSA. She has over 30 years of healthcare informatics and clinical experience and is a former BeachHims board member. She actually transitioned the treasurer duties to me a couple of years ago. She will be talking about the information sharing strategy for primary care home and just got back from HIMSS last night. So please help me welcome Betty Da Silva.
Bring up my. Thank you.
Let's go there.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to share our information sharing strategy, our project around how to enable the information sharing for primary care home and across the continuum. Jude mentioned I came home last night from HIMSS, but with an extra cup of coffee and my glasses on, and Nancy gave me a little unkinked my little thing in my spine. I'm a brand new person, so very delighted to be here. I also wanted to introduce Oliver Thompson, who's our senior project lead for this project. And many of you know him, and I'm going to really count on him to help kind of answer questions later on or even so that's great. And I also want to, it seems like in IMITS we have a lot of Olivers. So the other Oliver I work with is Oliver Guter-Andrew, who really wanted to, he sends his greetings. He wanted to be here, but unfortunately had a meeting conflict in Victoria. Greetings from him. So before I go on, this is really a summary and I hope a good complement to Dr. Brender Hefford's presentation on the patient medical home. Complementary in that we wanted to share with you our IMITS or IT information sharing strategy and approach. Last year, we undertaken a kind of a six-month project to kind of identify that high-level conceptual solution design for information sharing to support primary care home. And this presentation really gives you that next level of work for a year one project out of what we envision as a three-year project to support that information sharing to support primary care home and then, of course, across the continuum of care. So our agenda is giving you a little bit about the Vancouver Coastal Health clinical context, going deeper overview of the clinical information systems within VCH and primary care home and our information sharing strategy, overview of our year one solution approach to enable primary care home, a review and highlight our key year one project delivery, and then the various multiple kind of project streams that kind of link that that delivers on the year one solution. And really, and also kind of provide an overview of, we all know that primary clinical engagement is very and key, an enabler to all of the work that we do, and just kind of review one slide on of all of the touch points with our clinical stakeholders, and then questions at the end. So Vancouver Coastal Health, I won't go deep into this, but it is serves 25% of the BC population, providing primary, secondary care, tertiary care. It covers, delivers the continuing of services across for residents of Vancouver, Richmond, North Shore Coast, Garibaldi, out into the Cedar Sky, Sunshine Coast, all the way up to the Bella Bella and Bella Coola. So a big range. And you see here on this slide, which I won't cover, kind of just some important stats around how big and what the health authority delivers in terms of clinical services. It is organized as a community of cares with numerous care delivery sites within each CHC. So the care that's delivered is acute and ambulatory, primary care, community, residential, for example. And Providence is a key, important affiliated partner to, with VCH. Brenda mentioned this morning about the family practice divisions. And within VCH, the region, we have seven divisions of family practice. And the project team that we'll go into in a minute describing is working very closely with the Interdivisional Collaborative Service Committee, which is really made up of family practitioners and VCH senior leaders working and planning regional strategic priorities and direction, and including the support of primary care home. So Brenda sent, for those in the audience who was here this morning, Brenda gave you a kind of a picture of the targeted community service operating model. This is kind of a slightly different kind of depiction out of it, but it really kind of is essentially the same, where we have, you know, the patient really at the top and really centered, you know, amongst all of the providers, and that's what we're here for. We actually had another kind of depiction where we actually had the patient centered in the middle. So think about that, though, although this diagram shows it at the top. We have our primary care home consisting of the primary care medical, the patient medical home, both within the private practice and within VCH, as I mentioned. They have owned and operated primary care home. And then as well as the other key part is within the primary care home is the interdisciplinary team that's providing primary care services. So part of the operating model on the clinical front is really the community care services and within the specialized community programs. That's kind of that green bigger box, as well as we have specialized specialist care services within that community services component. And at the bottom, we have the other kind of healthcare and important providers. When we think about what we need to think overall around this whole ecosystem of the need to share information across the continuum. So, and what we try to do is represent in the gray arrows all the information flow that's needed between all of these providers, and including the patient. So primary care home, just to kind of recap where we are in terms of kind of current state and challenges, the primary care home model is in flux for some time. I think as mentioned at one of the stations, the teams are definitely evolving, and then the actual primary medical home practice is evolving. We don't have kind of really any a really definite set of what is the IT requirements at this time. We have a good general sense, but in terms of, for example, the shared care plan, we don't have that right now. So our approach from the year one solution is really about needing to be really pragmatic, provide short-term solutions, leveraging what we have today, and being very flexible and align it to our kind of three-year medium or more long-term roadmap in alignment with the evolution of the primary care home model. So stepwise, achieve it to align to a longer-term vision, ongoing, we're trying to be nimble, and that's what I'm hopefully going to try to, in the next slide, to kind of show you what I mean by that. So clinical information systems and information sharing strategy. I think Shelley mentioned and Yoel mentioned today around within the VCH Health Authority space, Cerner, Paris, and InterHealth Profile, which is the EMR solution for supporting primary the VCH owned and operated solutions are our VCH system enablers for quality care and is part of the overall broader clinical and system transformation. Now, with primary care home, we really, I think we're trying to really also bring in to how does the private primary care and specialist tools that are we need to have in terms of what is the strategy for sharing information across the continuum. So this is a kind of a picture that just kind of at a very high level kind of describes the tools that, and information systems to support not only primary care home and the patient medical record, but across the continuum. The next slides go into this a little bit more detail, going back to that for a previous slide around the operating model, the primary care and community operating model. So we have, again, the patient at the top. We have multiple EMRs that are within the private patient medical homes. We have IntraHealth Profile EMR in the VCH owned and operated. And we have our PARA system, which is the community system within VCH. We have, again, going down into the specialized community services kind of green area, we have PARAs being used by our community care providers. There is the nurses, the OTs, physios, and so on, in our public health, in our other programs, mental health and addiction. We have we have the multiple EMRs, again, within the specialist care providers, and in a variety of kind of different applications, again, used across the bottom row, which is our other providers. And of note that, you know, our enterprise CST solution is within our systems roadmap. And so our strategy, so taking this all around, taking that information on what tools and information tools are out there, what's our strategy? There's four elements of that strategy. Establish the standardized electronic shared care plan in the primary care home, both private practice and within the VCH owned and operated patient care home. And number two, enable patient medical home shared care plans and other useful information, other useful patient information to be shared within the other care team members. Three, share that useful information from the VCH care providers and share that with the primary care home, especially within the private practice and VCH providers. And then lastly, but actually really not, I shouldn't say lastly, it's number four in the slide, but really important is to really look at enabling patient access and interaction. That's a good. So I'm next going to just describe a little bit of our existing information sharing enablers. We have CareConnect, which is our also known as the eHealth Provincial Viewer. And that is access right now, and the information which is very broad, accessed now by a large number of clinicians within the health authority, and broader than the health authority, but for this purpose, definitely with our VCH community providers, with the specialists working within the hospitals and so on. So what's not in place, especially to support primary care home, is to really help kind of meet that gap in the access of CareConnect within the private practice space. Accelerus is the used now as, I think Shelley also mentioned this morning, the information distribution, health information sharing that is right now in place for sharing information from VCH providers to the private practice. But the gap right now is that we don't have from the use of information flow from through Accelerus from the private practice to VCH. But I think the key takeaway from this is that we are have kind of two existing information sharing enablers today, and we're going to leverage that as part of our year one solution. So a little bit more based on the previous two slides, and what's our solution approach? It is then to the first element is really around that approach is to share useful VCH patient information from the patient medical homes, both private and private practice VCH, using Accelerus, which we're going to do by expanding kind of reports to content and reports and notifications to the primary care home. So leveraging what is in existence today, but building upon that. Care Connect, our strategy is to expand the content and make it available to the private practice. The second key element is enabling that patient medical home share care plan sharing and other useful information from the tools that we have used by within the private, the primary care providers and the community providers and our acute clinicians. And so how we're going to do that, again, is within VCH, within the VCH owned and operated primary medical home, we're again going to leverage Care Connect and have that information flow between the acute community and from Paris, IntraHealth, and Cerner. Within the strategy for the private practice patient medical home is really to really align and work with our various vendors with support our EMR vendors and collaborating with the Doctors of BC and the other health authorities and working with the Minister of Health to really enable that sharing of information, the shared care plan across the continuum. We are looking at overall, with this approach, putting in some building blocks, but also trying to offer some tangible solutions in the short term. So key year one deliverables, just a summary and highlighting some of it based on just segue to the previous slides. So share care plan established at VCH and private practice. Care home, we are looking to we definitely are working with the Doctors of BC and making sure that we are aligned with the content and the templates that will come out of the Doctors of BC alignment and working with them. We plan to expand Care Connect content to include share care plans within within the VCH patient medical home. We want to extend and include PharmaNet medication profiles and other priority clinical content. We're all also looking to deliver on expanding the Care Connect access to private practice patient medical home. We're working very closely with the ministry around that, including kind of the privacy requirements to enable that. Expansion of, as I mentioned, and leveraging Accelerus to expand the VCH reports and notification, which currently exists today, and distributing that to the GP's EMRs. And then we want to work really with leveraging, in the next bullet, really leveraging the shared care plan work that's already in place and then needs to be aligned with other important projects and partners. And what we want to do is look at taking that shared care plan and implementing that with our IntraHealth EMR, learning from that experience, piloting it, and then expanding that. Patient access, I think, is very important. Both the clinical content and the access model, the strategy needs to be developed for patient access. And then I had a conversation with Shelley around, you know, how can we actually work even more closer with HIM around building that strategy. And e-referral solutioning, this is really around the technical solution for sending in referrals to all of the providers, and this is definitely the solution for this is definitely in year two. But what we're looking now is really working and assessing all the possible solutions that are out there, and working with Phil Barker's team and as well as Interior Health, for example. So this is the e-referral solution. It's really around kind of the analysis component in year one. So in the summary, what we're looking to do to support primary care home and information sharing across the continuum is really to expand and enhance and increase acute encounters and reports throughout this ecosystem of EMRs, the community PARIS tool, and the acute care system. Provide increased content through expanding and increasing kind of community summary information from PARIS into Care Connect. VCH, for the VCH owned and operated primary care teams that are in VCH at the various CLCs, which are North Shore, Richmond, and Vancouver. We're looking to kind of bring all of that information through InterHealth and look at building a clinical summary to be again shared in Care Connect. The shared care plan, definitely, I've already mentioned. Increasing that medical information in Care Connect, including PharmaNet, the information content that's already into InterHealth in PARIS, so bringing that all more together, and then hospital and notifications, as I mentioned. So we have a number of work streams within our year one project, looking at time. About 15 of them, and I'm just going to really provide some really high-level kind of overview of what this project is and what these different work streams are about. So number one, tactical supports for the proof of concepts communities. As I mentioned, the primary care home model and prototypes are evolving. The practice and the workflows are still being defined. Where our team with our clinical analysts and other members of teams are really working, are going to work very tightly with the proof of concept communities to really see what are the challenges around information flowing. We know that there's lots of duplicate charting right now. There's kind of hybrid charting with the between PARIS and InterHealth. We know that the information flow is not, you know, reaching out from the health authorities, primary care home clinicians, and working with their private GPs, EMR. So there's lots of kind of challenges that are just happening today. So what we're going to do is work very closely with them, trying to offer them and reduce all of those duplicate charting challenges and the flow of information, and really try to streamline and help as much as we can, and take those lessons learned out in the field, and then help inform the other work streams. Sure, care plan development, I think I've talked a little bit already around that, is really around working with the doctors of BC, the shared care plan project, leveraging that and making sure that we're aligned with what evolves out of there, both from a shared care plan content and template perspective, are that we're aligned, and that we're ensuring that the care plan requirements within the community and primary care space within VCH are also aligned with this. Number three, implement the shared care plan at VCH. So once, again, we have a clear understanding and definition of the shared care plan, working with the doctors at VC, we do want to implement the shared care plan at VCH using our InterHealth, into our InterHealth EMR, and as I said, really learn from that. Number four is around that information VCH clinical information sharing. That's again around, you know, what are the gaps that are out there, What are the challenges in terms of both content gaps and workflow gaps, and working aligned with our three important projects that's happening right now at VCH, which making sure that we're all aligned to make sure that information flow is streamless. The eCommunity Next is our Paris expansion kind of project. It's around having our upgrade, using and leveraging our upgraded system, which is now Paris version 6. It's working with the CST project to make sure that the information flow also is aligned with our Enterprise Cerner solution. We have another really important project, though not formally part of a primary care home officially, but our downtown east side secondary generation strategy from a clinical program perspective have the same requirements as a primary care home and patient medical home. So the team is really making sure that we're aligned and working closely with these projects. Expand reports distribution notification. Again, we are key linkages, again, is the eCommunity Next project, which is about the expansion and leveraging our Paris tool. And we're working very closely then around, you know, working with the vendors community, how can we expand that capability kind of consumed and being aligned with that increased reports distribution notification. Expand Care Connect content. That includes, as I mentioned, the clinical summaries from our health authority system, Paris and IntraHealth, is in the highlight. VCH EMR integration with Care Connect. Our IMITS primary care and community team, many of the members are here in the audience, actually, specifically, our IntraHealth EMR application team has developed a simplified key direct link from the IntraHealth profile solution to that link, gives the EMR user, the IntraHealth profile user, a direct link into Care Connect. And that has been very well received. So the user clicks within a link within the IntraHealth profile and gets directly into Care Connect. And we want to kind of look at that capability, what are some lessons learned, and how can we expand that more and leverage that more. Private practice EMR integration with Care Connect. This is around expanding, as I said, our Care Connect access to private practice and working closely with the ministry around that, our privacy and security teams within both VCH and IMITS. And again, really working with that vendor community to support that additional capability. Medication in Care Connect, I think I've covered already. We're really looking at PharmaNet information as well as the medication information within our health authority systems. Patient access and interaction is really looking at what is the strategy, how do we pull everything that we talked about within the room today, what is that strategy, working with health information management team, looking at virtual care. I think that's definitely a key aspect of supporting primary care home, and how do we develop that collaborative strategy for patient access engagement. Sharing private practice EMR data with VCH, this is really about kind of more of on the technical solution. How do we actually what is the technical solution in the privacy requirements to ensure that we can share private practice EMR data broader than both private and within VCH across both VCH and the private practice. So we're really looking at kind of doing an assessment of what are those technical solutions and the privacy requirements to help kind of move forward for a year two, even expanding the solutions that we have in year one. e-referrals, this is definitely needs to be another kind of provincial look at what we're doing, and it needs to be aligned with the provincial lens. So on the right, very important is looking at our communications and sustainment strategies and privacy and records management as part of the kind of the other work streams. Last slide, clinical engagement. As I said, it's very important to be driven clinically, to have the IT solution be supported by clinical requirements, and as well as be supported and adopted and driven by the clinical workflow and at the point of care. So what you see here is kind of a depiction of all of our clinical engagement with this project, both within the primary care homes, both on the VCH and the primary family practice side, the various projects I think I've already mentioned, and the different programs and services, and also just to point out too, we definitely believe in the value of clinicians working on the system sides within an IMITS side. So we have a number of clinicians who are part of the project team working together with the clinical programs. So that's the slide, and I think I'll open up for questions now. I'm also just wanted to say you'll get, up and down, it's an exercise right now. You'll get this presentation, and I didn't mention the back. If you're interested a little bit more on what the acute system, Cerner, Paris, and IntraHealth, what is that? What are the kind of capabilities within those systems? They're included in your appendix. At the end, so you can look at that later.
Great, thank you so much, Betty. That was great. You know, this is a really important project, and it speaks to a lot of the things that we've been speaking about today, about trying to share information across those silos that we as a health system have actually created in the first place. But any questions for Betty? Right at the back. Oh, yeah, sure, Laura.
Thanks, Laura.
This is not a planted question.
The question is, it actually involves Fraser Health, too. So I know UCI is trying to send data into Care Connect, which is great, but what about also putting a UCI link in your profile EMR? It made me think that we should probably, we have the link to Care Connect in Cerner as well, but you know, we talk about sharing data. I know we'd like to send the data because the provincial viewer is used, you know, in the northern and everywhere else, but I mean, I know you guys are web-based, and all we could do is just put another in-context link to UCI, so you might want to consider that as well.
Yeah, maybe Oliver. I was looking. Goodness, Oliver.
Are you listening?
I was listening, and we've already talked about that, and yes, it's a part of the discussion.
So did the audience hear that?
No.
All right.
No, I don't think so.
Yes, thank you for that brilliant solution. We're working on it right now.
We're working on it. Have you heard that before? Yeah, so you know, I still go back to the comment that Phil Barker talked about earlier. Is Philip still here? Yeah, just the idea of doing things fast and effective, because synchronization across Fraser Health and Vancouver Coastal is so important. But another question right here.
Sorry. No, just to answer your question, Laura. So we have been talking to the InterHealth profile about putting the UCI link in there, so we're working on that. The base for that is always we use the PIP, so active integration to the EMPI is the base, because we use the EMPI as the source of truth. Once you've done that, you can really work on the other systems to link them all together.
You got it? Okay.
So, Kathy Wolverton with the CST project. I'm just wondering, and it may not be directly for you, but is there any reason why the providers don't have access to Care Connect outside of the hospital environments?
Mm-hmm. Did you get that?
Oliver?
I was just going to refer to you.
Is there any reason? History? Maybe lack of momentum up until this point? However, as sort of articulated within the project, that's definitely a priority to do that and actually to get that out there. I know the privacy has been a significant barrier, and the question of, you know, you've got an extra 1,000, 2,000 physicians, at least within the BCH. How does privacy processes being be put in place to monitor, to audit, to take care of the breach management side, if there is? We've come a long way in actually helping to come up with solutions that privacy are actually happy with. So they're less worried about going out there. Mm-hmm. And I think with this project, we now have the momentum to do that. So we'll be doing it soon.
Interesting. Are you a provider? Okay, right. So just adding to what Oliver's just said, so most of you probably appreciate this, but you have different privacy legislation for public sector and different privacy and separate legislation for the private sector. And that might seem quite silly to us, and it probably seems ridiculous to the public, but that's one of the significant barriers around this. But we're getting over that, and that's definitely part of this project, so we're going to solve it.
Absolutely.
Questions anymore? Betty, do you want to just make a little comment? I thought it was interesting because Brenda Heffer this morning talked about the needs of general practitioners, and I know your project spent some time actually going out there. Can you tell us how you prioritize? Because I noticed at the top of the list there you had the shared care plan. Why did the shared care plan suddenly become the top of the list? Because I wouldn't have thought that would have been top when I first engaged with this project.
That's a good question, Paul. I think shared care plan, from I think a clinical perspective, really is about how do we bring all the care together. And I think we are prioritizing that because it's a key strategic objective, I think, clinically, than what is then driving us more from an IT enablement perspective. I think I am a nurse by background. I've worked both in the acute and community side. And so from my clinical hat, I really see the strength and the value. And it's really about going back to patient-centered care, right? And from a care coordination and planning perspective, the care plan, I think, is why it is the top.
Right, and it ties in so beautifully with the concepts of the primary medical home.
Mm-hmm.
Doug, do you want a question?
Thanks, Betty. That's a really great and encouraging talk. I remember there was a project started a few years ago. Shane, I remember the Vital Hub project.
Yes.
Which was an app which would reach out to the data sets wherever they lived and then pull the information and then present it in a way that looked like a formulated chart. And it didn't matter what the source of the data was, it came in a way that was relevant to the person looking at it. And it looks like Care Connect is heading in that direction. The problem with having a link to the eHealth viewer and a link to Fraser Health is that it doesn't provide all the information in a single view in continuity. You really need to have it all in one place. The provincial DI viewer went through that process where you could look at images from one health authority at one time and then another health authority at another time. But if you needed to compare two MR scans a week apart, and one was done in Fraser and one was done in Coastal, you couldn't look at them side by side. And that's what you need to do in practice. So I don't think having two links is actually a good clinical solution, even though it's a technical solution. So anyway, I think it looks like Care Connect is moving along. If you gave every family doctor in Vancouver Coastal privileges at the Vancouver General Hospital as a visiting physician every year, they could have legal access to Care Connect.
I know.
Done.
I know. Yeah. I know. We were talking about that yesterday. You're preaching to the choir. I will say, just on... I've just agreed with you. I agree with you and you still want to argue, for goodness sake. But on the medical imaging side, the DI viewer is rolling out and will give radiology. But that's the plan. You will see in contact, you won't even know where the image came from. You will see a full longitudinal record for any patient that had a medical imaging exam anywhere in the province soon. All right. I think, any more questions for Betty?
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much. Thanks. Just before we bring Daryl up, though, a little Twitter promotion. Where's Tiffany? Tiffany, come and take the mic, because we're going to just encourage you to get active on your phones just in a second.
Thank you. So for those of you who have Twitter, actually, hands up if you do have Twitter. Well, that's a good, maybe a tenth of the people. But, what we're trying to do with BChimps is really increase the communication around health informatics. And if you're getting some interesting ideas and thoughts around health informatics from this session or as you take it away tonight, look at the Twitter account for at BChimps, BChimps. There's a hashtag BChimps as well, where we've been continuing to post updates today during this session. And if you continue to have conversation about it and want to pose questions to your colleagues, that is definitely a forum for you as well. So you can hit that up on the Twitter hashtag BChimps. Thank you.
Thanks, Tiffany. So that certainly helps. It gets the profile for BChimps. Okay. So who's introducing Daryl?
Myself.
Thank you. All right. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
Started on Alan.
Yes.
Introducing. Just a quick reminder again to fill out your evaluation forms, because right after this, we're going to be giving you the tickets for the draw for these filled out. I will be checking to see if you filled them out before I give you a ticket. Completed. You don't have to put your name on them.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Alan Gez. I work for McKesson, but I'm the vice president of BChimps. Very honored to be here today to introduce our next speaker. Just before I do that, I want to mention one thing. With my role at McKesson, I've been traveling through BC through Canada, and I've been going to a lot of these conferences equivalent to organized by our usually organizations very similar to BChimps. And I really want to insist that I think what we do collectively is really amazing in terms of the quality of the speakers, the organization, the hotel, the food. But I think even more, most important is really the engagement that we can see during the day and the feeling that everybody cares. So I just want to say that that's really amazing, especially comparing to other Canadian provinces. So that's really a great job. So I met with our... Yeah, thank you all. I think we can all thank ourselves. I met with our next speaker about 2 years ago, and we had a talk about patient portal and patient engagement. And I remember from this one-hour face-to-face meeting that our next speaker was very passionate. That's the one thing. Definitely, I do remember that. And he was very interesting about, you know, the data that we could collect after a solution like a patient portal. And no wonder that today he's going to talk to us, I'm sure with, again, passion, about, you know, what represent the game changer for physicians that represented by the new data that can be collected and can be analyzed and made available for the physician right away. He's a fellow of the Canadian College of Family Practice. He's a UBC Department of Family Practice Clinical Assistant Professor. And he's obviously, and of course, the Chief Medical Information Officer of Fraser Health. Please help me and give a warm welcome to Dr. Daryl Samuel.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it. Well, thank you for that introduction and welcome. I get the opportunity to round out the afternoon for everyone today. So I hope I won't be too... flat to when I take you down the data highway. We're going to take a trip down the data highway. That's why we've got the road sign up here. And we're going to do some myth busting to finish off the afternoon. And so it's a little bit surprising at times, and I hope you'll enjoy it. First of all, there's conflict of interest disclosure. There's none. And so... I wanted to talk about clinical decision support and data. And clinical decision support really depends on access to a system of knowledge. That system of knowledge is not frozen in time. It's continuously changing. It's like the world around us. We are inundated by new information at all points in our lives now, especially with the advent of the internet in the last 30 or so years. But for clinical decision making, it's one thing to get information, and it's another thing to get good information, information you can trust. And so you want it to be reviewed by the experts. You want to make sure that you're making the right decision. You want evidence from research and expert opinion. And what you also want is you want frontline clinical input and output. So you want to see what's happening with the decisions that you're making. So we now are poised in our systems to create them such that we can have instant access to the data that we actually input. So we're looking at the outputs now. We have to create a system where it's fine to put stuff into the system, put it into the computer, but how does that come out? How do we look at it? What's it going to help us do? And so it will be a game changer. And when you get real-time feedback on what you're doing with clinical healthcare decisions, you can actually make a huge difference in your patients' lives. There's a lot of stuff that we intuitively are bumping up against in the healthcare system, which perhaps we feel is a waste of time, but we don't have any proof. So if we build the systems correctly, we will be able to tell what stuff are we wasting our time on and what can we stop doing. And that's also very important. So I'm going to give you four examples of how this actually plays out. And I'm going to borrow from, I have the privilege of teaching first and second year family practice residents at UBC. And so I'm going to borrow some of the work that they've done and show you that this is all publicly available information, but we did a study on chest x-rays because we said, you know, we're ordering all these chest x-rays. Is there any correlation to what we're doing when we're ordering chest x-rays? Who decides to order a chest x-ray for pneumonia? Like, so we had to narrow it down to patients with pneumonia, but you could just slice it right across all chest x-rays across the board. We wanted to know if there is any correlation between how many chest x-rays are ordered and the outcome of the patient's journey in the hospital for care. And so we did the study. We crunched the numbers. We actually have a health business information analytics database in Fraser Health so that we can retrospectively get the numbers. And the amazing thing about the chest x-ray study that was done by Ruzba Ahmadi and Sean Herman is that, surprisingly, there's a direct correlation. It's statistically significant. And what that means is when the clinician is writing the third chest x-ray for the patient with pneumonia, you already know that the length of stay is blown out of the water. So that length of stay, chest x-ray number three, when they're writing chest x-ray number three, length of stay is 13 days. If they write two chest x-rays, length of stay is right on the money, 7.4. This is the power of the data when you look at it from the back end. If you give this information to clinicians, you could have a flag in your system to say, well, chest x-ray number three, let's pay attention to this case. We also looked at the variability of the variance of chest x-rays for the length of stay, because we compared it to something, anything that we have for an outcome measurement. There are very few outcome measurements that we have embedded in our healthcare system today. But the variance is all over the map, and that also speaks to the fact that maybe we don't need to order as many chest x-rays as we're ordering. Maybe we're ordering them because it's habit, it's routine. There's no studies that tell us how many chest x-rays are really needed. Maybe you only need one for a particular clinical case. So that's one. This next study is an example of residential care admissions to hospital. So this is a situation that we face every day in the healthcare system. We have patients in residential care facilities. They get ill and they go to the acute care system. They're admitted and then they stay in the acute care system and then they come back and they're admitted back to residential care. And the reason our residents were interested in this, was Brianna Noon and Fatima Kabar, is they realize that when the patient in residential care goes into the hospital, you've now consumed two beds in the healthcare system, and one of them's empty. And it stays empty for the entire length of the hospital stay. So you've actually, you're not backfilling that other bed. It's sitting there costing the healthcare system dollars. And it has another effect in that the patients who are in the hospital waiting for those residential care beds can't get them. So they're consuming unneeded acute care when they actually just really need residential care. So the level of the care in the systems, it's from a systems perspective, this is what the study was designed to have to show up. So we crunched the numbers and there was a lot of data to look at. We looked at, I think, 2,000 at least. And it's a quality of care issue because the patients really aren't getting the right level of care anymore. Not in the acute care system. They need residential care. They have a lot of problems. They get infections because they're staying too long in the acute care system. and their moods go down because they don't have the social interaction that they would have in residential care, and then vice versa. Then the emergency gets clogged because you get a lot of people getting to the hospital and maybe they don't make the cutoff for the admission and they're sent back. So we broke it down and did a little digging through the most responsible diagnoses for these transfers. Fracture of the femur is number one. Pneumonia, urinary system sepsis, COPD, heart failure. Pretty typical. That's what you'd expect, perhaps. And then we broke it down by length of stay. 1 day length of stay. And it was quite surprising what the data showed. You know, if you got your 1 day length of stay, it was pneumonia, fractures, 2 days. So across the board, when you broke it down per day length of stay, you know, nothing too surprising on that particular slide. But this was quite interesting and not what we were expecting to find. So what this slide shows, you can see the red circling around there. The 1 day length of stay is like off the charts. We're sending these folks to the emergency. They're staying in hospital 1 day and they're coming right back. But if you look at the curve, after 21, 23, 25 days, all of the patients have returned to their homes. Almost all of them. And so currently we keep these beds open for 30 days just as a matter of routine because no one's ever looked at it. But what we're missing here is we're missing 5 days, between 25 days and 30 days. It's space in the system that we could capture back. And all we have to do is look at the numbers, and the data shows it to us. So this is an example in the healthcare system of how something that we all experience every day, and you may experience this driving home. Why, when you drive down the highway, suddenly do you have to stop when there's nothing else happening? The car in front of you stops, you stop. And that's the shockwave theory of traffic. And I'll see if I can get this to play. I don't know where it went. Uh-oh. That's what happens when you touch the wrong button. It's there. Hang on. If you want to go back. I have the mouse. I just need to go back.
What are you trying to do?
Maybe you would go to home.
Yeah, I'll go to home.
No. Maybe you reach.
Just open the present. Sorry about that. It's the video.
Yeah, look, it's delayed. So it's stuck. So we've asked it to do so many things.
At any rate, what the video shows, it shows how they've studied when you give a group of people cars to drive in a circle, and you tell them to drive at the same speed, and they drive at the same speed all the time in a circle, eventually what happens is they come to a complete stop, and then they start going again. And it's called the shockwave theory of traffic. There's no obstruction in the road. There's nothing blocking the system from flowing. All it is basically a simple, scientifically proved phenomenon where you have nothing stopping you from going straight ahead except the person in front of you. And that's what we have when we did the study for the residential care. So,
back to your presentation. Good old PowerPoint.
That's all right.
You know what the Prezi? Was it here?
Yeah, it was on the stick. It's on the stick.
Okay. So then we can maybe try to get it back.
Okay. Just go to the stick.
There. Okay.
So that was basically the premise of looking at why we're keeping two beds open for a bit of a longer time than we actually need to, and the data actually showed us that was what was happening. So if we thought about the system, we could say, why don't we keep the beds open for 25 days instead of 30? all of the patients, 95% of them, would still never know any difference was happening in the system. They would all get back to their residential care homes, and we would gain back that capacity that we actually discovered is evident in the study. And 5 extra days every year for every system is a huge amount. And if you crunch the numbers like they did in the study, it actually adds up to quite a bit of money, too. So, good.
This was my nightmare last night.
Was it? Are you back on?
Okay.
Don't play the video.
Don't play the video. I told you about the video. Anyway, you can look for the video on YouTube. You can find it on YouTube. It's the shockwave theory of traffic. There's about a million hits on it. So we did the heart failure study, and this was done by Saf Rizuki. This was also very fascinating. And we thought, well, you know, if you have a family physician, you know, your stay in hospital is going to be shorter. It's going to be less because you're well looked after. Your family physician knows how to look after you and is providing you good care in the community. And so we did the study. We said, well, do patients with family physicians have a shorter length of stay in hospital? And it turns out they don't. Actually, they have a longer length of stay. It was completely opposite of what we thought we knew about the healthcare system. And there is a little bit of information in this study that shows why. The reason is the patients who have a family physician already have 20% more morbidity and mortality, comorbidity, than those who don't have a family physician. So it actually made sense when we looked at it that the length of stay was shorter for the cohort with no identifiable family physician for heart failure. So that's fascinating because it's not what we expected, and we would never know that if we didn't crunch the numbers and get the data. We're going to look at pediatric ER visits as a final example. So this was done by Dr. Gambier and Dr. Noble. And it was done over 2 years because we first just looked at the pediatric patients and then we looked at all of the patients in coming to the emergency department and saying, you know, are these folks visiting the emergency department because they don't have a family physician? And so we had a lot of data. We've got access to the data now. It's retrospective, but it's not in real time. So it's over 500,000 data points, which is a huge amount. It's all statistically significant. And the interesting thing is that, you know, if you break it down by site, you can see all of the visits. This is all the hospitals in Fraser Health and the numbers. And then do they have a GP? Well, most of them actually do have a GP, 86%, and 12.5% didn't. And then there was a couple, 0.06 at the clinic. But that wasn't really the most fascinating part of it. We actually found that there was no difference in having a GP or not having a GP. Even when the hours of the office were closed, even on the weekends, all of the times we looked at the time of visit, it made no difference whatsoever. And in fact, what the data showed is that if you have a GP, you're more likely to visit the patient if you're a pediatric patient, if you're more likely to visit the emergency, statistically. Which, again, is something that, you know, I didn't know that. I wouldn't have thought that would be true. That's not what we would have believed. But without the data, we're blind in the system. We really need the data to tell us what's actually happening so that we can actually make good decisions for the healthcare system. So this brings me to the order elements and the quality outcomes, how you can tie them together. And basically, you know, evidence from research is only one part of the equation. It takes about, you know, some studies have said 16 years to get a randomized controlled trial into clinical practice because you've got to change manage everybody to get them to know about it and then get to change their practice. So that's one part of it. So you can try to buy that information, you know, order set companies sell them to you, but that's really only 50% or less. The other part of it is that you basically have to get your clinicians who are writing these protocols for making these admissions happen, you've got to get them to feedback their knowledge because half of the other part of it is getting them to discover what they're really doing. They have lots of PDSA cycles, and so they discover things that aren't published, will never be researched, are not going to be funded in a randomized controlled trial because there's no drug company behind it. Nobody wants to know except us because we're the taxpayers, and so it's our system. And then right now, we can only look backwards. We have retrospective aggregate analysis. That's not good enough. We've got to build our systems so that basically the data is presented in real time so you can make a good clinical decision. That's the first brick. The second brick is just to count how many transactions we have. How many of these check boxes are we checking? Right now, we build systems because the clinicians tell us to build them. They say, just build this primary care home module, and they stop. They don't say, I really would like to know how many times you're going to render that care plan and who's going to look at it and how many times an order came out of that care plan. That's really what I want. But because we've grown up in a paper-based world, we don't know to ask for those things when we tell the technicians to build it. And so if you build it that way, you will see that there's a strong correlation, just the same way we saw with the chest x-ray study, between certain things that you're doing, a positive correlation, providing good outcomes, and then you'll see a lot of things that we do, we check boxes, make no difference whatsoever, but the clinicians are conservative, and they're not going to stop doing what they've always done unless there's some information, some data that tells them differently. And that's the second brick. So if you build the system in that way in real time, you can actually make a real difference in outcomes to care. And you can actually get rid of a lot of things that are making no difference to your care plan or anything else that you're doing in the healthcare system. And then basically you can improve your quality of care significantly. And that's the third brick. So when I talk about these ordering routines, you should be aware that these routines are very complex. There are many, many, many of them. You will get tired if you start reading through them because that's what they look like. CBC, differential, CP7. The solid dot means that it's done whether you check it or not. The checkbox means you got to check it. And it goes into huge costs when they run these things forward. So, you know, all of these medications, the clinician will check a couple of these boxes and then it translates into huge costs again and again and again. Every pneumonia case that comes in, every COPD case, every surgical post-op case, again and again, the cycle just runs with these recipes for care. And they've been written basically with trial and error. We don't actually have any feedback directly to say, you know, this is a good part of it or not. So you'll see some examples of how the thinking for this has been changing over the years, and one of them is choosing wisely. Now, that's going to the patients and saying, you know, we see that there's a lot of CRPs being ordered, and, you know, maybe you don't need x-rays for your back pain. But that's actually the long way around to getting to the answer, because that's sort of asking the patient to make this good decision for you and say, no, I don't, I've read the information, and so don't order that test for me. But what you really want to do is be able to say, I know because I've got the results that ordering this test for you is really going to make no difference whatsoever. This is the test you need right here, and this is really going to make your care good. And that's what you want to get to. And the data will show us that. How do we get from where we are today to where we want to be? And the beginnings of it is to take the paper-based world that we have in clinical care and to start sharing that so that we understand where we all are in the province, because it's quickly with the internet and the communications that we have, and we're all talking about plugging together all of our healthcare systems so the knowledge flows. But we're really not yet understanding that once we've connected all the plumbing, what are we doing about the information that flows down those pipes? And is it any good? And is anyone going to use it? And that's what we can start with, because we've actually cobbled together a provincial SharePoint site for order sets. So that basically is beginning to take hold on. We've got Fraser Health's order sets. We've got Vancouver Coastal's order sets. We're getting the Interior's order sets. We've got some for Northern. When you look at all of those order sets, like the examples I showed just earlier, you get tired and you want to go to sleep because it's so much information. It's unbelievable. There's over 300 in Fraser Health. We had 3,000 of these things. The Cancer Agency has them as well. So all of those things drive our costs, they drive our care, and they drive our quality, and yet we pay no attention to them whatsoever in our outcomes. The data will show us that, you know, the third chest x-ray that you check on that box, you've already changed the outcome for that patient's care. It's powerful. It's very significant. And so by sharing the paper-based order sets across the healthcare system, we will allow our clinicians to basically start working together to say, you know, we're all in the healthcare business. We're all doing the same thing. We all want to treat pneumonia the best way. Why don't we get rid of these two things, these two check boxes, and why don't we start using these other check boxes more often? The data shows it to us. And that's really what this is all about. So that's the myth busting, and that's the highway. And those are the references, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Daryl. I'm sure you were all stunned by that, as I was. I'm quite taken. I've got a lot of questions too, but open the floor. Questions?
Yoel over here.
Yoel first.
First of all, I want to say thank you. It's just so exciting to see clinical use of the data. And I was, as you were talking, I was thinking we should start trading baseball cards of physicians that use data. We put Doug on there, put Daryl. kudos. It's just terrific. My question is about your opinion vis-a-vis that whole exercise of data set standardization and management. British Columbia, we're a small part of the world ecosystem. We could purchase data sets from vendors. I'm sure you've considered whether we should be really in the business of creating, refining, standardizing data sets, or whether we should take something off the shelf, buy it from a Lynx type model, and go from there, based on, you know, $1 billion infrastructure that a company might establish versus our work, and how that translates into physician adoption. Could you comment on that?
Absolutely, and great question too. Thank you, Yoel. So initially, I thought the same thing too. I thought, you know, Zinx produces these things, patient order sets, Provation order sets. They are in the business of buying and selling these clinical care recipes. And then after I started looking at them and spent a lot of time going through all of how they're rendered and how they're detailed, I discovered some simple facts that are constraints for actually going and just buying these things. And Yoel alluded to a little bit of that with the adoption piece, but more importantly than the adoption piece is the fact that in Canada, just the way, I didn't create the system, but we're provincially funded for healthcare. So if we bought an order set for a chest tube, for example, because all of these have drugs in them, they have chest tubes, they have a lot of procedures in them that are equipment delineated, we wouldn't be able to afford it. So our healthcare system, the circle draws around our budget, which is provincial. So we can only really afford the care that we provide within the provincial healthcare budget. So we're actually, like it or not, stuck using BC type order sets. Now, that doesn't mean we can't use order sets across the health sector in BC. But, you know, when you look at how big can you go, you know, I talked to Jeremy Theremin when he got the order sets going at North York Hospital, and we had a bit of a discussion as well. And what we realized is that, you know, North York has a different budget for their chest tubes. So even if we bought those, we'd still have to modify it. And then once you start modifying these things, you're back at square one in terms of your costs. I once spoke to a clinical nurse educator who was putting together one of these order sets that you just saw there on the screen. It was a bowel protocol. She had been working on this thing for 3 years. These things are not cheap. They are costing us huge amounts of money in time, FTEs, to actually build them, keep them rendered, keep them up to date. And currently we're all doing it in each health authority. We're duplicating it. And that's what this order set website is basically trying to show everyone clinically for the engagement piece to say, you know, you're still treating pneumonia and interior health the same way you're treating it in Fraser. Why would you spend 3 FTEs to build your own order set when you can just shoot it across the internet in 2 seconds or less?
So, Daryl, do you think physicians in Vancouver Coastal, for example, that are building the CST projects, Odyssey, are they using this resource? They are.
So I'm not sure if they're using it yet because we've just sort of are standing it up, but they certainly have, you know, we've done a lot of work with sharing so far. We've got our intranets connected. So Fraser Health has the intranet. Not a lot of folks know that. So when they're building these things, unless someone comes by and says, you know what, you don't have to actually build your BAL protocol order set from scratch. You could just steal it from Vancouver Coastal. It's there. It's on the internet. We have a GISA. We have a General Health Information Sharing Agreement across health authorities. I'm not sure how many people are aware. It's a public resource, and there's no reason why we can't share the information and the knowledge. And when you build the order sets with the data component, then you really get powerful with these things. They really become better.
You're right. We don't share enough, do we? Any more? Any questions from the floor for Daryl? Doug?
Thanks, Daryl. I finally get to meet you in person. We've corresponded by email several times. I think there's a few things that people need to know about the big data that's collected during the course of care, as opposed to the big data, the data that's used for research, for hypothesis testing. So it's not that there's no value in that work, because there's a lot of value in that work. But when you look at the outcome of care that's not part of a research study, in this kind of data, you get associations. And so the issue of chest x-rays and pneumonia. So if someone's really, really sick with pneumonia, you could already predict they're going to be in hospital a long time and probably need more investigations because they were really sick. So to me as a physician, that's not enlightening. And so I don't automatically think, oh yeah, he's got a third chest x-ray. That's a bad thing. The chest x-ray didn't cause him to stay in hospital a long time and have pneumonia. The pneumonia caused him to stay in hospital a long time and have the chest x-ray. But on the other hand, that's fascinating data, and it, you know, brings all sorts of good clinical research questions to mind, which would improve the care of those patients and help the healthcare system. So it's an excellent use of data. And it's fascinating to do, to look at. I'm interested to know about the SharePoint site that you mentioned. Is that now the new EPOP site?
No, actually, this is the PHSA SharePoint site here. So,
because PHSA has just rolled out a new site within the last week. Well, I don't know. Is there someone from PHSA who can help me with that? So all of the policies, procedures, order sets, and things like that have been put on a new website. Like, I'm just wondering, is that like the current date? Just in case people are looking for it, it might be different.
So when you look at policies, procedures, and protocols, okay, you start to throw the net very wide. And so this is actually specifically for pre-printed orders, because we have a clinical policy office in Fraser Health, as you know, and there is so much information in that, like how do you actually go put a Foley catheter in? So there's a well-delineated, recipe, if you will, for doing that, for doing every procedure under the sun. And we all follow these procedures. And so that again, is another huge amount of information. And so that's what's being stood up as well, even though, like, we have to start somewhere, right? But all of that, all of those policies, all those protocols, they are subject to the same scientific principles that I've just elucidated here, which is, you know, if you actually tie them to what kind of outcomes you're getting and the outcomes that you want to have, then you can actually make those even better too.
Okay. I'll check with my team. I'm not certain whether they're the same system or not for where the information lies, because it's a recent change.
Right. Thanks, Daryl. Any more questions? I just have one, Daryl. So the scenario you described with the correlation between, oh, not the correlation, but the scenario where a patient is moved from residential care into an acute care bed and you've got these spare spaces all around the place. Clearly, I think we all get the fact that you can only use that capacity in a number of specific scenarios when there's enough of them. Have we done anything with that information, or is it just interesting information at this point?
Well, I guess it's up to you to do something about it. I mean, really, the residents, when they did their research, they checked there wasn't any specific policy on it. Like, no. There's nothing written about why it's 30 days.
So that's the interesting part of the question.
It's like we do, yeah.
We have lots of information like this, but we have this void, don't we, between the research and the practice. So this was done through UBC?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's all on the UBC website. Yeah.
Okay. I'd be interested. We'll talk later, but I'd love to see some of that stuff. Yeah. Any more questions for Daryl? Okay, this is really... Oh, there in the go. Back corner. Thank you.
Effectiveness of the outcome. So is this being done, and then are the order sets being followed, and there's a feedback loop so that if you find something, the order set has changed? Is this being implemented, or is this an idea, or?
So it's an idea that is in the early early days of implementation. Part of it is just communication and understanding that our healthcare system actually runs on these things, because that's sometimes an aha moment for everyone, and that care has become so complex that, you know, you actually can't run the system without these things anymore, and that's another eureka moment too. You know, I can pull up the cancer website and I know how to give chemotherapy because I could give chemotherapy based on the protocol that they've outlined step by step by step. You know, would I feel confident in doing that? No, because, you know, I don't have a lot of experience. But from a technical perspective, that's where this information is going. We are creating this body of knowledge, and it's up to us to sort of manage it and count it, be aware of it, and use it to our advantage and use it to benefit our patients in the province. And we can't buy this stuff from somebody else outside of BC. They're not going to give us this, the specific information that's relevant to us within our healthcare budget. So it's going to be up to us to do it, and we can continue doing it independently, you know, for a long time, I guess, but it's really unnecessary now.
Thank you so much, Daryl.
One back here, you know, Paul.
Sorry, one more question? Oh, yeah, sure.
Sorry, it was just on the comment on physicians and data. So physicians love data, but they want it in real time. So, for example, if I'm treating somebody with, admitting somebody with urinary tract infection or they're septic, you know, I want to know an antibiogram. So I want to know resistance patterns for the drug, the bug that I think they have. Or if I send them home, I want to know what resistance patterns exist in my community. So I need a regional resistant antibiogram, ideally on my device, right? So I need it all aggregated by infection type, for example. So so physicians, clinicians in general, I think love data, but the data has to be in real time and in a functional way and accessible at the time that you're writing that prescription or deciding to admit or discharge. So just to comment around that. So I think we've got that robustness of data. And even admitting a pneumonia, for example, you want to know, or a urinary tract infection, did they grow ESBL the last time they were in? And how you're going to treat them. So that even in an order set, I think there's some real-time pieces that we have information about, but how do we present that to clinicians at the time that they're doing the script? So I just wanted to comment on that data piece. We love data.
Absolutely, and it's interesting because, you know, in a paper-based world, none of this would be possible. You would have so many pages of paper to get you anything real-time. Any information that was relevant, you would never be able to get through it. But in the electronic world, with the internet, now the computer crunches all of those numbers. It doesn't get tired. You can have the information presented at your fingertips at the point of ordering that will make the difference. And you know, the future is, this is how genomics is going to work too, right? You're not going to be able to see the genome for your patient and be able to consume all of that in your own brain. The computer will be able to do that for you and say, this is what you need to do. So it's part getting us to the future.
That's a great example. And we're running a project like that in Coastal right now. But, yeah, predictive analytics is on its way. And it's actually working in some areas already, isn't it? So we are getting there. It's just a little slower than some of us would like. Any more questions before we wrap up? Just want to say thank you, Daryl. That was a fantastic presentation. What a great way to end the day. Thank you.
Hello again, everyone. End of the day. I'm just wondering, how are you feeling now? Well, I have to say I am blown away. What a day. I'm so thrilled to see so many inspiring speakers and high-quality presentations. and also tons of brilliant ideas came out from the Q&A session and interaction session. It's just unbelievable day for me. I hope everyone had the same experience as me. Tons of good feedback already flying in. I heard from some audience already saying this is one of the best conference we ever had in Beecham's history. We are so honored to hear that. And definitely, it's not only us make this happen. I want to use this opportunity to say big thank you for Further Health, Providence Health, and VCH, and also PHSA. Without your strong support, we won't be able to make this incredible conference today. And thanks again for our sponsors to provide support, and also thank you for everyone to be here, to be part of the amazing day and make the amazing day together with us. Before we actually move to the door prize drawer, I just want to make an announcement. There will be Beecham's education session in Kelowna on April 27th, which will be co-hosted with Beecham's and CGI and also Hitachi. So Dr. Doug Kingford, the CMIO of Interior Health, will be speaking about his vision for an interoperable health system. The session will be broadcasted and also make it available for all the Beecham's members. So please stay tuned. Also, I just want to mention, I think it's very interesting, like when at this very beginning of the day, I mentioned about who actually is original founder of Beecham's. Actually, it's a group of CIOs from health authorities help us build this organization. And also, I was very interested to hear from Phil. He mentioned he used to be with Beecham's, and he was so glad to see we're coming back. I'm so excited to hear that. But also, I think it's also the time for you guys, the BC Health Informatics leaders, to come back to Beecham's. And also, not only come back by yourself, come back with your teams. Beecham's is not that Beecham's. It's not their Beecham's. It's your Beecham's. It's our Beecham's. Beecham's is a family for BC Health Informatics professionals. So, yeah, I hear the laughters here. I'll remember that. So I'm going to looking forward to see you guys again in September, the four conference. And also, hopefully, that will be another sold-out event. But let's make a membership exclusive. So only membership. So looking forward to that. Before we move to the next step, I just want to say thank you very much, our dearest Paul. It's been a long day, and it's traumatic work for you. And you always, always make our conversation to the next level and always inspiring further explosion of the questions and discussions. I think we couldn't thank more for your contribution to Beecham's. Let's please join me to give Paul a big. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Yeah, it was very dramatic. Thank you very much.
So I guess we are waiting for the evaluation form to come back, and therefore we can do the last activity. The door prize drawer.
If anyone has an evaluation form and you haven't got a ticket, can you put your hand up? Just put your hand up if you need a ticket.
And also use this time, I want to say thank you so much for our fantastic BChem Board of Directors team, amazing team, hardworking team. And without you guys, we won't have this amazing event here. And also, if we already received a lot of interest, so if you are interested to get more involved to work with BChems, want to get involved into the board nomination, or want to be the volunteer for BChems, please come talk to Kate and also Tiffany for volunteer opportunities. Do we have everything ready? So can I have Bridget?
Did we get them all? Is there anyone that's been missed? It's not a car, but it's a good gift.
And also, don't forget to join us just across the street. The social event at the Francisco. You will enjoy. I guarantee you'll enjoy the lovely food.
Paul said it was a dinner with Michael. Much, but. You have to be in the room.